The listener will also not know I had a perfectly good day at work, just kind of a normal day at work. Trevor is on vacation, and Ken looks like he hasn't slept in 3 days. He's in the field all day, which is why I'm moderating this panel.
The New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, featuring your hosts, Gabe Reinick and Ken Holyoke.
Welcome back to the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast. I'm Gabe Reinick, and I'm in Manchester, New Hampshire, and I'm joined, as I am every fortnight, by a recently traveled Ken Holyoke, who's now back in Lethbridge. How are you, Ken?
Yes, I am back in Studio 598. I'm doing well.
You thought you might have to live in the Chili's.
The listener won't hear this episode, but the next episode I did a brief update. I actually didn't have time to go to the Calgary Airport Chili's because I had such a short layover in Calgary. However, shortly after I recorded that, and about 10 minutes before my flight was supposed to be boarded, they fully canceled the flight, and so I had to scramble to find my way home that night. But I did make it home. I was able to sleep in my own bed, which was lovely. And now I'm back in Lethbridge and kind of catching up on emails and doing all that fun stuff.
Good. And can I understand the highlight was that means that you're flights were canceled actually in both directions.
That's right. Yeah.
East I managed and west.
Yeah. So one of the national carriers, WestJet, has made it into the black book there. That's or the black list, I guess. The black book is like where you keep your good things. The black list is where the bad things are. It was a little bit of a disruptive flight thing, but I made it back safe. All is well. So. Bag should be, will probably be interrupted at some point by a FedEx delivery of all of my luggage. So,
Well, that's good. We're doing a thing here, Ken, where we're going to step out of time, but we'll tell the listener more about that in a minute, because right now our time traveling sponsors are, like they are every fortnight, the Association of Professional Archaeologists of New Brunswick and the ULETH Exchange Program. And we've also, got a few other people to thank before we get started here, Ken, because, we may have some new listeners, and so if you're just joining the program for the first time, welcome to the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast. But Ken, we've got some exciting news, really, about that we've been in the news.
Yeah, so the listener may have, if you are a New Brunswick resident, you may have picked up, and you're a CBC listener or a CBC watcher. We appeared on the CBC New Brunswick in several different formats, both in audio and video, but then again about a week later in print form. Maybe we could link that stuff, our media, in the show notes today.
Oh, that's a good idea. We'll throw that in the show notes. So I think it may be one of those things that, depending on if you're in the United States, you may not be able to read it without a VPN.
Yeah. So become
it's just like submitting an ESAF abstract in that regard.
Yeah. Become one of our VPN listeners, and we'll have a new listener from Irkutsk that can join the show. But we specifically want to thank Ali, Pat, and Ben with CBC for both arranging for the interview and for doing the interview and the producing and everything. You made us look pretty good. I think we talked about it in the previous episode, but they managed to cut out our awkward hands, which was great, except for a couple seconds there. And so, listener, I think along with this, as we'll announce shortly, this has brought in a bunch of new listeners, and we have some exciting news to share in a bit. But I think the bottom line here is that you should support your public broadcaster because they do an excellent job in highlighting local stories and bringing local information to people from a kind of an on-the-ground perspective. And so, you know, we're not huge newsmakers by any means, but we really appreciate the coverage, and it's had a direct impact on kind of the popularity of the show, which is we can see in the numbers, which is really exciting.
That's right. And one of the things about that popularity, Ken, is it's really causing us to rethink and just re-emphasize the need to get a little, a name that's got a little more pizzazz than the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, don't you think? And so one of the things that we emphasize when is that our relationship with the listeners, that we would never just steal a listener's intellectual property. We wouldn't do that because much like a public broadcaster has a contract with the listener that's implicit and understood, we have a similar code, a kind of podcasting code of ethics, where if we were going to take your intellectual property, we would give you something in return. And so, Ken, one of the things that we would like to do is give the listener the opportunity to rename this podcast. And so, Ken, if the listener had a podcast name for us that they thought was better than the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, where would they send it?
They could send that to our email address, which is newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. That's New Brunswick Archaeology, all one word. Archaeology spelled ARCHAEOLOGY, newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. And I believe a recent website update means that email address is also on our website. Would that be correct?
I believe that would be correct, but it's possible what I actually just did was put up our bibliography, which we'll talk about more later this episode, and forgot to put up the email address, but I think it's there.
Okay, well, so listener, maybe by the time you're listening to this, it will be up there, and you can also find all the information and everything about the show and mine and Gabe's research and other folks that research at newbrunswickarchaeology.com, so that's New Brunswick Archaeology, all one word, archaeology spelled ARCHAEOLOGY, brunswickarchaeology.com.
Yeah, truly extraordinary that wasn't taken. But Ken, if the listener wrote in this week with that new award prize, if they were going to win the prize for renaming this podcast, here's what they'd get. And so, Ken, we recently learned that a number of our listeners like to enjoy the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast while they're in the tub, while they're bathing.
We did learn that.
And relaxing, that's right. I don't know about you, Ken, but I'm actually not much of a bath person. But look, lack of experience or knowledge has never stopped us on this podcast before. So I recently did try a bath because I was on vacation, and as you know, each of us is a big proponent of self-care.
That's right.
So Mrs. Dr. Reinick suggested I try something called a bath bomb. And I mean, I wasn't sure what was going to be relaxing about it, but I went ahead and had a drink, and I climbed to the tub, and I plugged in the radio and turned on White Rabbit.
Dropped the radio in the tub.
Well, I was just going to say, when it comes to that fantastic note where the rabbit bites its own head off, I said to Nadine, I want you to throw that radio into the tub with me. And I assumed we'd do a bunch of drugs, and eventually she'd throw a grapefruit into the tub. But as you can gather, listener, I was wrong about what a bath bomb actually is. Ken, do you know what a bath bomb is?
I do. It's an effervescent joy.
No kidding. It's a good use of the word effervescent, because in fact it is. It's a 1989 invention by someone named Mo Constantine from Lush Cosmetics. That's right.
Really?
Yeah. And as you indicated, it's effervescent. And it's a smooshed together combination of essential oils, moisturizers, fragrances, and colors into sort of a, well, grapefruit-shaped ball. And if you put it in hot water, it slowly releases those therapeutic and comforting substances. And I have to say, Ken, it is, in fact, pretty relaxing and pretty enjoyable. And so, Ken, as you know, we don't have a new name for this podcast. And even though Lush and Soak were alter egos we considered when launching this, the listener has probably noticed that we're looking for this new name. And so for the creative listener who enjoys the finer things in life, we've partnered with a locally owned purveyor of fine soaps and bath products to pull together a luxurious collection for the lucky listener who's looking to treat themselves, maybe while they listen to us in the bath. Would you like to hear about it, Ken?
I would love to hear about this.
Well, okay, so the first thing we've got in the basket, a selection of bath bombs that are named for places in New Brunswick that they invoke. So we've got the Bantalore Bunker Buster with infusions of ash. We've got the Moncton Moab with hints of cocoa to invoke the Chocolate River. We've got the Shediac Scud, which is shaped like a lobster and exudes an exfoliating salt. And the Hampton Harpoon, which is shaped by water and alive with culture. Active cultures for a probiotic skin routine.
Just to go back to Bantalore, what does it invoke?
It invokes a hint of ash.
Oh. Is that the coal in the area, or is that that you've burned everything around you to get rid of the bugs?
It's the ash trees that you're allergic to.
Oh, yeah. No, those are alders. There are, like, alders, yeah.
See. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. I'll talk to our purveyor about the Bantalore Bunker Buster. And that's not all, Ken. So we've got those bath bombs. for the lucky listener, but to help you keep you cozy to and from the bath, we're throwing in an Egyptian cotton robe. It's very plush, two front pockets, a plush shawl collar, and then it's got the New Brunswick Archaeology podcast logo tastefully printed on the back. And in that basket, we're also going to include a bottle of sparkling Courvoisier and a custom New Brunswick Archaeological Podcast rubber ducky inflatable drink holder. And so you just inflate that, and the duck, it's attired in a New Brunswick Archaeology baseball cap. And that way your sparkling Courvoisier floats around while you're sitting in the bath. Listener, isn't it time you thought about yourself? Unwind with the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast and let the waves wash over your body while the sound waves wash over your ears and a subtle explosion of essential oils and relaxing fragrances transports you, that's right, you listener, to soggy bliss. And so, Ken, if the listener would like to have that wonderful treat in the bath, where would the lucky listener send in the new name for this podcast?
Well, they could send that name to newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. That's our email address, newbrunswickarchaeology, all one word, archaeology spelled archaeology. newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. And you can also find us on the internet. We have an Instagram handle that we never promote on this show, and that is @new_Brunswick_archaeology, and archaeology spelled archaeology. And
it'd be funny if we spelled that one differently than we spell the
yeah,
show.
Yeah, it would be. Yeah, it's like ESAF. I think Archaeology yes. of Eastern North America is AE, and then Eastern States Archaeology is just E.
Something like that. I can't remember the details. But anyway, Ken, if you stick your hand into that mailbox, what do you find?
Well, we actually have some remaindered mail that we did not get to last week. And so
okay.
So we read emails from Josh, Tamara, and David. And now we've got one from Michael. And the title says, Ice Cream Sommelier, One Omission. Oh, this is a good one.
Oh.
I think you're going to like this. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to move this over to this screen so it's easier to read. Dear Gabe and Ken, I enjoyed Gabe's presentation at the start of the latest episode describing the current gift package for the winning new podcast name. How fascinating to learn about this impressive and hitherto unknown side of Gabe's skills and interests as an ice cream sommelier, no less. Who knew? Few of us NB Archaeology podcast followers, that's for sure. Just a sec. Do this. I felt as though I learned quite a bit about this hitherto unknown world of frozen treat taste curation just listening to his description. As a resident of the larger Maritimes New England region, your podcast covers, however, I would be remiss if I were not to mention one omission in the survey of regional varieties of the ice cream novelty, especially as this relates to the all-important question of terroir, the Vermont oh. maple creamy, pronounced oh. creamy, but very much its own entity, and so it's spelled C-R-E-E-M-E-E. Okay. Our neighbors to the east, Maine and New Hampshire, merited reference through some of their local varieties, but alas, no mention of the creamy, from the state with the highest annual U.S. production of maple syrup. This delicate and exquisite summer treat is served up at farms and stands all over Vermont and nowhere else. I have to admit that people apparently consume something called creamies, quote, creamies, in flavors other than maple, but the true connoisseur knows that its identity is at one with the iconic tree whose leaves we share with the Canada's national symbol. One's preferred summer creamy stand is a matter of passion in Vermont. Newspapers carry annual rankings of creamy sources.
Oh, wow.
And this is such a perfect encapsulation of the concept of terroir. First, the maple flavor. Is it gathered in traditional, time-honored fashion? Sap boiled down with wood fire burners, hand-tended and carefully crafted? What grade? Light amber? And in brackets, no. Need I say more? Or rich, dark notes of deep burnished bronze? And Michael, I can very much agree with you that I do love the... I do love a darker, maltier maple syrup. I'm not a big fan of the light amber. I feel like you don't get quite the same maple flavor. And whence comes the dairy component? Hand-milked from choice cows who feed on wholly natural pasturage and small farms around Vermont? The result of all this in a perfect maple creamy is a truly pure encapsulation of summer in Vermont, as I am certain Gabe knows, having such a refined degustatory sense. I'm sure he meant to include it, but had too much else to enlighten us with. Nevertheless, I felt I needed to speak up for this cultural treasure to be had only in the Green Mountain State. Anything that might aspire to this experience elsewhere, alas, can only hint vaguely at the true taste of Vermont. There could even be a bit of related historical archaeology. A conserved area I frequent has old maple trees with a few antique taps still protruding. Did Ethan Allen, perhaps, taste maple from those historic tubes? Did his farms produce Did his farm's cows produce milk, which, chilled in a late spring snowfall, serendipitously led to the first maple creamy? Thanks for indulging. I continue to listen to every episode. Carry on. Michael from Barre, Vermont.
Well, thank you very much, Ken. It's nice of Bernie Sanders to write in.
Yeah.
But no, thank you very much, Michael. We're going to have to, I'm going to have to look into this this phenomenon.
Yeah, and I'm going to have to ask Michael if there is a, if they do a lactose-free version of this, because a creamy sounds delicious, but a creamy is not, my digestive system would not accommodate a creamy, I don't think, so.
Yeah, no, well, fingers crossed.
Yeah, okay. Now, let's filter through.
And I should say, I appreciate just, we really do have listeners that have a wide range of expertises, too, which we
That's
which
true,
we
that's true. Yeah. Okay, hold on, I'm trying to find the next one here. Okay, oh, this one from Sean. Podcast name. Oh, no, okay, we've read this one. This one was about the gentleman who did not want to rename the podcast.
Oh, yes. Excellent.
Oh, David has written back. Appreciate AI references. Guys, just wanted to say I love all the AI references or names in the opening segment. I shall assume Ken wrote it, and I wonder if Gabe caught them all. David. DS. I don't know if
did
catch all of those, did you?
No, I did not.
It was full of puns.
Good.
So this is from Dimity, and it says, UNB Archaeology. Hi, guys. I just stumbled onto your site and was delighted to see that finally there is a podcast about NB archaeology. I'm one of the few...
The long wait is over, Dimity.
I am one of the few UNB anthropology master's student with a specialty in archaeology. I graduated in 1984, in the archaic period.
Oh, this is...
My thesis was at Bokebek.
No kidding.
Well, that is very cool, Dimity. We have both read your thesis.
Yes, that is incredibly cool. I should confess, I have a photocopy of your thesis, and something went wonky with the photocopy, and so about a third of the pages are upside down, and so I have this kind of vivid like also just a visual memory of it as well. That's great. That's very exciting.
Yeah. So Dimity goes on. I was very fortunate to have Dave Keenlyside and Scotty McNeish as my external readers, who work closely with me as archaeological. That's a pretty solid committee right there. With me as archaeological resources in the department at that time were a bit scarce. I was fortunate to join Scotty at a couple of other sites, and we remained friends. His reputation as a forward-thinking archaeologist and a real force of character was well-deserved. From NB, I went west to BC and was fortunate enough to get a 3-year grant to dig a shell midden at Wayland Farm. Money for archaeology was running out by that time, and I went on to other things, but archaeology was still my passion. Jump ahead many years now, and I live in a little village of Tubac, Arizona, which is the site of the earliest European occupation of what is now Arizona. Being on a river, it, of course, has been occupied by First Nations for several thousand years by dint of their use of the, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of this, but aqueous irrigation canals?
I'm not sure.
It's a Spanish word, so which cool. are still used in the area today. This year, I became the lead site steward of an early Spanish period habitation in our little village, which we will open up for tours. So that is the story of my journey from starting as a New Brunswick archaeologist to still doing it in the high desert of Arizona. Love listening to your podcast, and I'll think about a new name, but it should still have New Brunswick in it, Dimity. Well, that is a really awesome email, Dimity, and thank you for reaching out. And also, sounds like you have a really fantastic job. Early Spanish stuff in the Southwest would be totally fascinating archaeology.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you so much for writing in, Dimity. And Ken, I wonder if we could try to do a Holt Point interview.
I kind of feel like we might need to, Dimity, we might need to not just send you stickers, but maybe get you on the show. Because
that'd be a good, great site.
Yeah, a great site. And also, like Tales of Archaeology in New Brunswick in the 1980s, where I think it was basically Chris Turnbull and the Merry people who he could coax to come to New Brunswick, basically.
I think so. So, yeah. Very cool.
Very cool. Thank you for reaching out.
Yes, thank you.
I've got an email here from Ryan that says, thanks for speaking at the Bellier's Cove Hall. So this is actually somebody who, I'll talk about this in the next episode, but I did a public talk in Bellier's Cove while I was down in New Brunswick, and it says, hi, guys. It was nice to meet Nice to meet half of you at the public talk in Bellevue's Cove a few days past. It's really neat to hear from a professional taking an interest in the area and hearing about all the work going on in the field in the lower Wolastoq. I must say, as someone who has lived in the area for 30 plus years and who struggles to explain to people where I'm from, it is bizarre to hear place names like Bellevue's Cove and Henderson Settlement being tossed around on your podcast. Just a follow-up question to a question I had at the talk. How does one get involved in local archaeology? Is this a profession best left to the professionals? I've taken a number of undergraduate archaeology courses during my degrees, including a geoarchaeology course by Dr. Lucy Wilson, whom you mentioned worked with David Black on a paper during your talk. Wonderful person and professor. So I'm not completely ignorant of the subject, but have shied away from grad school for some time. As a high school teacher, I do have July, August off and wouldn't mind volunteering. Are there fieldwork opportunities for people like me, or is this type of work best suited to master's students and anthropology majors? In any case, thank you both for the work you do, both in research and in educating the public on this fascinating profession. Ryan. P.S. If you're still giving out stickers, here's my address. Ryan, you will definitely get some stickers. I think actually you might have a couple waiting for you at Charity's house. So follow up with her and let us know if you've gotten those. But I think you ask a good question, and I don't know. So New Brunswick is one of the few provinces that does not have an active archaeological society, and usually the archaeological societies in states and provinces are who organize digs that the public takes part in. So I know here in Alberta, at least once or twice a year, the ASA takes out a group of members of the public, and they work on archaeological digs, and they're led by professional archaeologists, but it provides training opportunities and public engagement, you know, and there's all sorts of events that kind of go around with them. But I think both Gabe and I are pretty involved in archaeology, and I suspect would welcome people to come out, at the very least, to kind of see how archaeology works. But Gabe, what do you know of any opportunities in New Brunswick specifically, or nearby provinces, or where you're working mostly in Maine? How that works down there?
Yeah, well, and thanks for writing in, Ryan. One thing I might look into is if you're willing to travel a little bit, Ryan, you could look at either both the Maine Archaeological Society and the New Hampshire Archaeological Society. Do both field schools and volunteer digs with members of the public, and so you can check out their website and get on their mailing list. Like, I know the Maine Arch Society specifically has done last year at Katahdin Ironworks did a field school for the public, and so there's some opportunities there. And there are certainly other opportunities just to take a field school as well, I think, is one approach, right? So sort of Google around, and you can kind of mix travel with taking your field school.
Okay. Yeah. So there's a couple suggestions, Ryan. Stay in touch. And thank you for reaching out. And I thought for a second that we had another email, but it says we would love to connect. It's from Alex San Filippo. And it looks like it's just an ad of some kind for something called Pod Score.
Oh, it's a competitor of Podcorn?
I don't know. Focused on helping podcast hosts and guests reach more listeners and grow their income so they can change more lives. Well, that's quite a mission, Alex.
This show is about changing lives, Ken.
It really is. Really is.
And not to mention passive income.
Yeah. We remain unsponsored, but we remain committed to you know, finding new sponsors like the Tim Hortons Beverage Company, who
That's right. If Mr. Horton is listening right now, Ken is drinking at Tim Hortons.
Yeah. That's the mailbag. That was excellent. There's some great emails in there. Listener, we love getting mail. We love hearing from you guys and hearing about, you know, your thoughts about new suggestions for the show, or any of your thoughts about archaeology or things that you're seeing out there. And so you can reach us at NewBrunswickArchaeology@gmail.com. That's all one word, New Brunswick Archaeology. Archaeology spelled ARCHAEOLOGY. And you can also find us on Instagram at new_Brunswick_archaeology, and archaeology spelled ARCHAEOLOGY.
That's right. And so, Ken, you just indicated that there's a number of people we need to mail stickers to, but we might have some other exciting things going in the mail, because we have, this is a prize heavy issue of the New Brunswick Archaeology Podcast, but something very exciting is happening, Ken, and that is that the quest for 10,000 listeners
is on. It is on. And so we announced to the public last week or last fortnight that the quest for 10K was going to be a goal of this season. And I think you and I had spitballed that we would hit that sometime in January or February of 2025 was
that's what we thought.
That was our thought. And so, listener,
Ken and I are good at predictive modeling, as you can tell.
Yeah. Listener, I had given a shout out to public broadcasters earlier in the show, and the reason that we wanted to shout them out, and we're going to pause right here for some celebratory noise. That's right, listener.
Yes. And thank you for the applause.
The quest for 10K is over. In fact, we've hit 10K, and so what we thought was going to be an episode or a contest where you try to hit the 10,000th listener, you have all taken part in that already. We are at, right now, 10,149 listens, which is incredible.
We are pretty excited about it, actually.
We are absolutely thrilled about it, and so we are still going to have the Quest for 10K contest.
That's right.
And so this is the first kind of, I think, real contest we have done.
And we should explain that the way this kind of works is that because there's a certain element of time travel.
Yes.
In this show anyway, it's not like we could tell, because we accept that there's a certain, it's kind of bend in how time works on this show.
Yeah, we also
can't. So who are we to say if you're in the future or in the past, you know?
Exactly. We also don't have that detailed of analytics. We get down to the city level, we don't get down to the device level. And so, so what we're
going to do, we can tell where a VPN is.
Yeah. We can tell when you're listening on a VPN, because yes. we've got a few hits in Thailand that I don't think are regular listeners. maybe it is, though. And if you are listener in Thailand, that would be really cool. So the quest for 10K contest, I have some notes here. Now, okay. What we would like you to do, and I'm not actually even entirely sure how we evaluate how this works, Gabe, but what we would like you to do is post a photo of yourself on mm-hmm. Instagram or LinkedIn listening to the podcast. And so,
or you can email it to us.
Or you can email it to us, yes. So,
or,
whichever,
Ken, there's a fourth option.
You can mail it to us.
Yes, you can take a Polaroid and tape it to a bottle of Balvenie Scotch and have it yes. overnighted to yes. either of our offices.
And if you throw it into the ocean and it gets to yeah. us, well, actually, it won't ever get to me. We would be in a catastrophic situation if it reached me, if a bottle in the ocean reached me. So take a picture of yourself. You can blur your face out if you don't want us to see what you look like. But if you post a photo of you listening to the podcast, or just a picture maybe of your device or computer listening to an episode of the podcast, it does not mm-hmm. need to be the most recent one. We just want to see people actively listening to the show. And on Instagram or LinkedIn, you tag us. And so that is, you use the at button. And so that can be either on Instagram, that can be the @new_Brunswick_archaeology tag, @mGabesie, that's @mGabesie, that's Gabe's Instagram, or @k_holysmokes, so that's @k_holysmokes, or all three of us. Mm-hmm. That's on Instagram. And then on LinkedIn, you would have to tag one of Gabe or I, or both of us, and that's just our names show up. So I think I'm Kenneth, and you're Gabriel, Kenneth Holyoke, yep. and Gabriel Reinick on Instagram or on LinkedIn.
And that's Reinick, all one word, spelled HRYNICK.
Yeah, one of the very few things that actually CBC did a great job getting our names spelled correctly.
They did. I did like the one look of fear in the announcer's eye when she got to my name, but she nailed it.
She nailed it. She did an exceptional job with the pronunciation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
So tag us in a photo on that, or send us an email at newbrunswickarchaeology@gmail.com. Or a mailing address of your choice, either to the University of Lethbridge or University of New Brunswick. Now, so we will accept entries for 1 week after episode 2 drops. And so this will air on September 3rd. So we will accept entries until September 10th, at which time we will take all of those names. We will throw them in a giant hat. And Gabe, we have quite a prize pack for the winner.
We really do, Ken. And so in that prize pack, let's work from what we know to what we don't know.
And then we'll go to Funky Town.
But what we know, and we should say, actually, if you're running a CRM company out there, and you would like to throw some of your own swag into this pot, we would welcome that. You just let us know, and we're happy to help you distribute your swag.
Yeah.
And we'll also give you a plug on the show.
Yeah.
But so, Ken, among the items that are in this prize pack are some books, including one that might be so fresh it's still warm from the printing press.
And in fact, is the topic of today's episode.
That's right. And that's the Bibliography of New Brunswick Archaeology.
That's right.
Works to 2022.
Yep.
And that's a Gaspro Press book.
Yes. And lead author Trevor Dow, who's our guest today, with Gabe and I as co-authors. We all have an essay in there as well, and an excellent essay by Isaac St. John, who is the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Penobscot, correct?
Holton Band of Maliseet.
Holton Band of Maliseet, okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the books you would get.
Okay. The next one is a book that Gabe co-authored with Matt Betts in 2022.
That sounds right. Yes.
Archaeology of the Atlantic Northeast, which is basically the first book-length treatment for archaeology spanning basically northern New England all the way up to Labrador. It sort of emphasizes cultural continuities, covers 13,000 years of pre-contact history, and they smartly, as you would look back into season two, Gabe and Matt included a list of sort of challenge areas for archaeology in the region. So if you go to episode... Let me just pull that up here, Gabe, because we should always episodes from the show.
We should pitch, but basically this means that it's useful if you're, say, a master's student and you're looking for a question to write your thesis about.
Exactly. So season two, episode two, you've got answers, we've got questions. We talked to Matt about some of those hard-pressing topics in Atlantic Northeast archaeology. And then the last one is...
And so, Ken, the other great thing about this book that comes in the prize pack that you're about to mention here is that it's not just a book. It's a monitor stand.
Yes. So the last one is the thick boy, the far northeast 3000 BP to contact, works as a book stand.
Do we have a copy with a French cuff?
Well, I don't. I think those were limited edition. I think we might have gotten the only French cuff editions, didn't we?
Oh. Well, I don't know. Well, that's too bad. We can't promise a French cuff then.
Yeah, we'll ask the press if they have any French cuff editions. Far northeast. The Far Northeast 3000 BP to Contact. So Gabe and I were co-editors on that. There are 17 papers in that, essentially focusing on the woodland in the Far Northeast. It is from the Mercury series.
It's the 50th anniversary of the Mercury series.
Mercury series archaeology paper number 181. Yep.
Yeah, I was going to look it up in the bibliography, but I just...
Yep.
You beat me to it. Okay, Ken, so we're going to throw in those books, and what else are we going to throw in for the winner?
Basically, any swag that we can scrounge up. So there might be some University of Lethbridge swag, there might be some University of New Brunswick swag, there might be some CRM company swag, and if we find a new sticker company, probably some NB ArcPod stickers or other things like that. And so, listener, that's the other thing that goes along with this. As always, if you have a new sticker company that you can suggest or a producer that is not Sticker Mule, then we would greatly appreciate it. And we're
somewhat flexible on politics, but it's important to us that you not be trying to overthrow the democratically elected government.
Exactly.
Your country.
Exactly.
I mean, so, I guess we can make some exceptions, but particularly the United States. That's
yes.
The
yeah. Yeah. So, we are also going to have, so that's the first prize is a suite of essential texts on New Brunswick archaeology and some swag. We're also going to offer a couple of runner-ups, so we'll draw two additional names who will get a new, brand spanking new New Brunswick Archaeology Bibliography, works to 2022 book, and probably some swag, some NB ArcPod swag as well. And so one thing to stay tuned for, listeners, we will announce the winner on the next episode. Owing to the, you know, mysteries of time and the September schedule that we both maintain at the start of the academic year. The mail might be a little bit slow getting to you, but winner of the prize, you will get this great prize. We also have to figure out where to ship these books from because they're all different publishers, and you would be surprised, but these aren't books that usually are right off the shelf.
It's true, Ken, but the and so we should say we you know, there's some flexibility, but we would love, you know, send us in a picture with some limits. I mean, if you listen in the bath, maybe don't send us exactly a picture of you, listening in the bath, you know, try to keep it rated,
PG.
I think, PG. But you know, we'd love to see an action shot of you excavating while listening to the podcast, but hanging out while listening to the podcast. Or
what do you do while you're listening to the podcast? I guess is, you know, do you listen to us while you're out for a run? So take a picture then. You know, is it gardening? You know, is it headphones on in the sitting room?
Yeah, is it headphones off in the sitting room?
Is it in the lab? You know, if there's a group of you, so
yeah. Absolutely. Ken, how are we going to handle this if we do get a group shot? What do? We enter everyone in the group? Or is this like one of those weird things where it's like a company buys a lotto ticket together and then destroy all their friendships fighting over their cut?
Yeah, we might have to let them decide that internally, how they want to split things up. So maybe you guys could do if it's a group picture, decide internally how in advance, maybe have a prenup for your prize winnings, how you will split them up.
That's right. Yeah. We don't want to be responsible for your internal friend dynamics. And so, Ken, just to recap the way the rules work, by September 10th, end of day, we'll say midnight Alberta time on September 10th.
Yep.
We need to have a picture of you listening to the podcast.
Not me, listener listening to the podcast.
Yeah, of the listener listening to the podcast. You have to find Ken and force him to listen to the podcast. And you can tag us on any of our social media. You can email it to us, or you can tape a Polaroid to a bottle of Balvenie Scotch and send it to either of our offices. Is that right, Ken?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. And in return, you will be entered into the prize draw for either the sweet winning prize or the pretty cool runner-up prize.
Yes. And
if you are a CRM company that wants us to throw some of your swag into the gift pack, you let us know and we'll plug you on the next episode.
Yeah, totally. And we will also include our social handles in the show notes today. And we will post something probably with this episode on Instagram and LinkedIn, so you guys know that this contest is happening.
That's right.
It might be easiest for them to like answer that post, kind of thing. Isn't that how those things kind of work?
I don't know.
I really don't know how. Emmanuel, you might need to explain to us how we're going to do this in a practical way. I'll get somebody Carolyn works with to. They're very good at Instagram. They might be able to tell me how we do this. So
fantastic. But I mean, we'll figure this out. Don't worry.
Yeah.
It can't be that hard.
No.
Don't
put your mailing address in the post either. We'll follow up with you separately through direct message or email.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And so, Ken, though, something that was kind of hard to do is we have just completed a book with our colleague Trevor Dow.
That's right.
It has 640 detailed bibliographic entries and covers almost everything written about New Brunswick archaeology in the published literature up until 2022, and that's what we're going to talk about this episode. Well, really, it's what we've already talked about.
It is, yeah. And so, and actually, there's some bonus content from 2023. I noticed that snuck in.
Did we sneak some in? Good.
Yeah,
for us.
My PhD thesis made it in. Lo and behold.
Oh, interesting.
but yeah. So we talked to Trevor about the book, how it came to fruition. I tried to stay awake, you might know that I noticed that I was quite a bit quieter. Something quieted me down. It was that I was just about nappy. So, listener, we're going to have a chat with Trevor, and we'll be back afterwards to close things off. And there is no hit piece tonight because this is essentially a long form hit piece.
Yeah. That's right. It's to get a little bit meta too. It's really a hit piece of hit pieces, right? Because
that's right. That's right.
It's a hit piece about 640 other hit pieces.
That's right. So
yes.
So you'll notice
it's a hit parade.
I think that's exactly what it is. It's a hit parade. Yeah. So the marching band is playing us out towards this hit parade, And we'll talk to you soon, listener.
Talk to you soon, listener. Tonight, we're joined by Trevor Dow, the Baron of Barker's Point, the Pharaoh of Fredericton, the Grand Poobah of the Association of Professional Archaeologists of New Brunswick. Trevor was educated at the University of New Brunswick, where he now also is an instructor, and he has over two decades, that's like 40,000 sidereal years or so for our American audience, directing cultural resource management projects all over the country, and he's currently with ECO4. He has forthcoming papers in the Canadian Journal of Archaeology, but tonight we're here to discuss a book that the three of us have written that also includes an essay by Isaac St. John and a foreword by Jocelyn Thompson. And that book is called The Bibliography of New Brunswick Archaeology, Works to 2022. Welcome to the show, Trevor.
Welcome to the show, Trevor. And I think, Trevor, you might be the first three-peat.
Yeah.
You might be.
I think it might. Yeah.
So the gold jacket is in the mail, Trevor.
Okay, sweet. Yeah.
And
maybe technically, actually, this might be four if we include the live episode.
Oh, that's true.
Oh, that's
you did
right.
make an appearance at the live episode. That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
The winner and still champion.
Got the record holder.
I think you are the record holder.
Congratulations, and by the way.
We have to send our email to Arthur.
Yeah. congratulations. And congratulations on the book, gentlemen.
Yes. Yes, all of us. It's great work. The listener won't be able to see the book. But
neither will Ken, because Ken's copies were sent to Alberta. So Trevor and I are each holding, I think, a copy of the book here. But I don't want to make you feel uncomfortable, Ken.
Could we get some of that, what's it called? ADR, the noise thing that everybody likes.
Oh, you want me to rub the book?
Yeah. What's that called?
ASMR.
It's not going to pick it up. It's going to be like when you play the xylophone.
Yeah, no, it's true. It didn't pick it up. ASMR. But anyway, if you want some ASMR, listener, pick up this this book and
pick it up, listener. What you should do is you should pick it up. You should take it to the till at your favorite bookstore, and then you should pay for it.
Pay for it.
that's what we would encourage.
Then read it, but also enjoy the textures of the book.
Yes, there's part of it you.
Yeah, it's really got an 11 out of 10 for hand feeding.
Yeah, and in fact, it's funny that you ask, because as we start off this special, intrusive, all-hit piece feature, because as I always think the song goes, don't it feel like hits keep getting harder to find? And then I learned that actually Paul Revere and the writer said, don't it feel like kicks just keep getting harder to find? But I think hits too, but not tonight, listener, because it's all hit pieces all the way down tonight. So why don't we just begin by describing what this book is, Trevor? So I can get us started here a little bit. It's the fourth book in the New Brunswick Bibliography Series, and that's a collaboration between the New Brunswick Kana Project at the University of New Brunswick Libraries and Gaspereau Press in Nova Scotia. And preceding us in this series, there were three bibliographies. The first being a bibliography of bibliographies, which is a concept so meta only a librarian could conceive of it. And then we had children's literature, and we have architecture.
Okay.
Yeah, architecture book by John LaRue, and then children's book one was by Susan Fisher and Margot Stafford, I believe it was.
That sounds right to me, right, Trevor. I'll take your word for that. but just to describe the book, the meat of it is 640 entries. So, and to describe our book, so the meat of it here is it's 640 entries, and so that those are citations basically. And what we tried to do was just compile everything that had ever been published about New Brunswick archaeology up until 2022.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of annotations. We maybe annotate like a quarter of the entries.
Yeah, something like that, I think.
And then we have a chapter by Isaac St. John, who's the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Holton Band of Maliseets. And that's on Indigenous Knowledge Systems. And then we have an essay by us called The Importance of Writing About Archaeology. And then there's an introductory essay, and there's a summary of legislation surrounding archaeological research in the province and how it's changed through time. And it also has an author index, which means that you can, if you have a favorite archaeologist who's written about New Brunswick archaeology, and you know how their last name begins, you can find their own entries in this book. But so, And then it's published by Gaspro Press, and they're a small press, and they mostly do pretty high-end stuff, right? So they mostly publish, like, poetry books, right?
Yeah, a lot of poetry books, a lot of little local histories or folklore books and things like that, yeah.
And
lots of quaint little books to read by your favorite fire source with a hot beverage.
And so... I should know this, but I don't. Have all four of the books that have come out, this is the third in the series, but it's the fourth of the series kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. Have they all been through Gaspro Press?
They are all through Gaspro.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And listener, this book is this Gaspro Press is so impressive that I tried to look up how to describe how the book was made. And I immediately became confused. It's something called Smithson, which I think means that so the listener may have once purchased a book by Ken and me that the glue immediately came loose on.
As is tradition with a Mercury, though.
Yeah, yeah. The glue is not going to come loose on this.
Why still holding up strong?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Looks like we got ourselves a reader. But this one will not come apart, listener, because it's sewn in, I think Smithson means that it's actually gold. I think they take gold and they loop the gold around the binding and then they melt it. And that's what that machine does. Does that fit with you gentlemen's understanding of the history of the book?
That seems
sure.
It seems as legitimate as I could imagine. Yeah.
Great. But so, and the listener will also not know that I had a perfectly good day at work, just kind of a normal day at work. Trevor is on vacation, and Ken looks like he hasn't slept in 3 days. He's in the field all day, which is why I'm moderating this panel. But so I thought what we'd get to now is that. To my mind, anyway, gentlemen, there are kind of three origins of this project. And I thought maybe we'd hand this over to Trevor to see how did this book come to exist, Trevor? Like what happened? So I feel like it was a little bit, it's like Hagrid in Harry Potter, where he's trying to explain why he has an egg that's going to become a dragon. He really just met someone in a bar. And, isn't it cute? But Trevor, would you like to walk us through this?
Yeah, sure. So, somewhat the origin started with your guys' own graduate research and sort of a Google Drive sharing information back and forth on here are sources about archaeological sites in this area and things like
that.
Well,
there was actually, there was a precursor to the Google Drive, and that was that we didn't have internet in the lab that we started at. And so we had a yellow lined sheet that we put references on that then got transferred to a Google Drive. Yeah.
Was taped over the light switch at the Enterprise building.
Yes.
It might still be there, actually.
It's not, actually. I was kind of hoping it was. I was down there last week, and it's no longer in Enterprise. So.
Oh, that's disappointing. I wonder where that went.
It's probably in the Department of Anthropology archives, is what I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah. Honestly, presumably Dave has it filed somewhere neatly. It's in a folder labeled 2010 or something like that.
Yeah, so that's kind of that's kind of where this notion of trying to collate all of this data about New Brunswick archaeology, I guess, started. But the book itself sort of spiraled out of my own academic research and trying to find data sets to kind of look at what's been going on in New Brunswick archaeology over the last several decades in particular. But so we kind of started working with two other previous published bibliographies, one that I think a lot of archaeologists in the region would be familiar with, and that was by Chris Turnbull and Steve Davis. That was published in 1986, and it included published works up to 1984. And then there was another one published in 1996.
Just for the listener, sorry to interrupt. The Turnbull and Davis bibliography, Dave and I were actually talking about this yesterday. Was it in Northeast Anthro, or was that a Manuscripts in Archaeology publication?
That was the Manuscripts in Archaeology, one of those sort of white papers that was published by the Council for Maritime the Maritime Council of Premiers. Yeah. Or, what was it? Maritime Premiers Council on
Cooperation.
Archaeological
Cooperation.
Yeah. Or something like that. It was a huge mouthful, but yeah, they published a number of white paper publications throughout the 80s and early 90s.
And I remember the charming thing about that. I remember we in our bibliography, we thanked the software Zotero and EndNote, which are these very sophisticated bibliographic software. In that one, they thank something like the computer.
Yeah.
which enabled them to compile this thing.
I think the interesting thing, the other thing to point out too about their bibliography is that theirs was specific to the entire maritime region, not just New Brunswick. So they were looking at, they included citations for Nova Scotia and PEI and Newfoundland and Labrador and those places. And that's stuff that we've sort of also compiled in the background while compiling New Brunswick specific stuff. But the book kind of spiraled out of my own academic work and me working with one of the bibliometrics librarians at the University of New Brunswick, Julie Morris. As we were kind of working through this project, she'd mentioned to me in passing about the New Brunswick bibliography series and said, you know, you should maybe get in touch with Jocelyn Thompson, who's the editor of the series, because I think this project would fit in good with their mandate. So, which is sort of to catalog all of the published literature about New Brunswick as sort of their larger goal of that larger.
And you brought up a term there that our listeners might not be familiar with, and bibliometrics. And so this is kind of the crux of the data set for your thesis. And so could you give us a little bit of an idea, what is bibliometric analysis?
It's the science of counting Bibles, Ken. you were telling me about how Logan likes to do this at hotel rooms.
he does love flipping through a free book in the hotel room.
So it's simply put, it's sort of a part of library sciences where it's a method of analysis that's sort of a popular way for exploring or analyzing large volumes of scientific data. And it's sort of a way for researchers to sort of unpack evolutionary nuances, within a specific field of study. So in this case, anthropology or archaeology, right? So
and the data in this case are like citations and references to particular regions, basically, or disciplines and that kind of thing.
Exactly. And I mean, that's a very high level sort of definition of it. I mean, you can go, there are many types of bibliometric analysis. One of the things that I was sort of exploring a little bit was looking at, collating all of these citations, but then looking at the interrelated or interconnectedness of them, like who is co-authoring papers with who, and you can sort of see research overlap in the region and things like that. But there's a number of different scientific analyses that you can do sort of with this kind of
That's right, listener. If you were working in New Brunswick archaeology in 1985 and you had a breakup with a co-author, Trevor can actually backtrack that through your reports. It's a little uncomfortable, but who's to argue with the data?
That's actually, that's actually a very nuanced field called bibliometrics. If you recall, we explored that a little bit with the paper at the CA's member two, when we had our session with in honor of our dear friend Dave
That's
Black.
That's right. And one of the things the listener is going to notice when they also become a reader of this bibliography is some of the trends we uncovered, including that David Black had authored or co-authored 15% of the published literature about New Brunswick archaeology.
Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah, it was. It's not an insignificant amount of contribution to.
That's a good thing to bring up, Gabe, because one of the things. So Trevor, you'd mentioned earlier that it's based on two bibliographies, and the first one is Turnbull and Davis, and the second one is a zooarchaeological bibliography that Dave was actually compiled with Jesse Webb, and there was somebody else as well, Brent Murphy.
Is Brent Murphy in the published version?
Right.
And, but then in the files that Jesse and Dave gave us, it was just, that was like, they had started to update it.
Okay, right. And the Brent Murphy and Dave Black published an article in CJA that was the bibliography. Is that correct?
Canadian Zoology, actually. It was 1996. Brent Murphy, Dave Black published in Zoo Archaeology in the Canadian Maritime Provinces, or in the Canadian Maritimes, excuse me, is what it was called. And it was in volume 9, I want to say, of Canadian Zoology.
Okay.
And we'll throw that reference in the show notes too.
But yes, and you know, I'm getting the cart before the horse here, but major thank you to Dave Black for opening up and sharing a lot of his files with us for this project, including a lot of the, as you mentioned, him and Jesse Webb were planning on revising that Zoo Archaeology bibliography. So there was a lot of information that they had collected for that, which David graciously shared with us. So a big thank you.
Yeah, and for that. Just while we're thanking Dave too, we should say he also gave us he somehow had the complete run of the New Brunswick Archaeology Society bulletin, which is called Field Notes. And we would still be running around trying to track down old issues of Field Notes if he hadn't just handed those to us to enter, which is great.
So there's a huge variety of information collected in this. Like you say, there's a lot of early colonial ethnographic data, things like that. There's archaeological and zoo archaeological data, it's pretty all encompassing.
Yeah, and so Trevor, one of the things that your work does is track some trends. I mean, in the kind of publishing folks have done. I mean, I'll briefly kind of return to like a theme we've had on this podcast, which is that it's important for archaeologists to publish their stuff, right? Because we want to get that information out there. And this is how
the not so subtle title of our chapter in this book, The Importance of Writing About Archaeology.
Exactly. And as you track that importance, what sort of stuff in the work you've spearheaded? What are the trends? What's going on in New Brunswick archaeology?
Well, it's I think the big thing without sort of
you want to leave a teaser here, Trevor, so that we have
Should we just cut it off now and leave the link to Gaspereau Press where they can order it and.
No, not at all. I mean, I think the important thing is that, you know, I guess one of the things right out of the gate that I think we need to address off the top is that this is specific to published literature too, right? So this is by no means fulsome. We're missing gray literature. This was, you know, part of this publication was, you know, they wanted published literature and things like that.
For it to be literature that the person who picks this thing up can actually find, in theory.
For the listener, when we say gray literature, we're talking about basically technical reports on like CRM work, maybe work that the provincial branch or some other smaller, like technical reports, basically that stuff that has not ended up in a peer-reviewed publication or in a book or something like that. And so that stuff does not appear in this, even though that is a piece of New Brunswick archaeological, the broader research picture.
Yeah. And I guess before I get too much into the results or trends or things like that we want to talk about, I think it's helpful too to frame sort of what our goal was with this too, right? Like we wanted to sort of create a tool for the archaeological community and the broader public, especially it's something that's welcoming to researchers from away, sort of helping to make that literature a little bit more accessible, or at least identifying where certain topics of knowledge can be found and things like that. But we also wanted to, you know, inventory publications about New Brunswick's archaeology for Indigenous communities who are often been separated from this information, and scholars and other sort of allied fields that are, you know, use this information for other purposes. But it's also a way for us to sort of identify gaps in in archaeological research in this province and, you know, provide, you know, opportunities for identifying where, you know, research gaps are, where people could, you know, start looking at identifying more information in those sort of areas. But it's also a way to, you know, sort of, we also wanted to find a way to celebrate New Brunswick's vibrant history and things like that. But also, it's kind of a way that we could track how publishing has gone in the province and how dissemination of information has gone in the province and sort of the implications that archaeological policy or decisions about research output and dissemination have impacted what kind of knowledge is being put out there and how people are able to access it, essentially.
So would you say that there was there, like, we talked about the Dave Black stat. Was there anything else that struck you when you kind of, you know, we don't do the bibliometric data analysis in here, but we talked kind of briefly about it in the paper that's in the book. Was there something else that kind of struck you as kind of an interesting trend or something surprising about the research change, like the change in the research industry or the research output in New Brunswick?
So I guess a couple of the really interesting, alarming, however you want to frame these sort of discussions, right?
Interesting and alarming are often so similar, aren't they?
Well, I mean, first of all, like I said, the gray literature is sort of a major gap in what we're considering here. We have a rough idea of the number of CRM reports that are out there based on the number of field research permits that are issued on an annual basis, something that we've information we've been able to get from the government in the past and things like that.
And which we have a forthcoming paper on that too in CJA.
That's right. Yeah. Whenever the next volume decides to show its face.
Season four.
yeah, exactly. But I think one of the most sort of interesting or alarming things that is evident in this research is that despite sort of rising static sea levels and storm frequency and amplitude, there seems to be little archaeological research going on in the province focused on mitigating or salvaging coastal sites. It seems that most of the research over the last several decades have been solely focused on mitigation projects ahead of developments that are mostly in the interior of the province and things.
Interesting.
Like that. And the other sort of thing is that the rise of the frequency of CRM archaeology in the province hasn't also corresponded to an increase in output of scholarly or even public archaeological publications. This is information that's sort of, you know, locked and guarded or not widely shared in easily accessible avenues.
Anyway. Yeah, I think that's a crucial point. I mean, and we can acknowledge Jesse and Jesse Webb and Dave here again. In the sense that they've sort of also discussed that in terms of zoo archaeology, right? Like they sort of said, you know, it's interesting that we're still pouring all this money on archaeology in New Brunswick, but you'd think we'd know more about animal remains, but we seem not to.
Yeah, but I mean, we've all talked about this, at, you know, in conversations and stuff, and some of that is to do with the fact that we're not really focusing on research in areas where there's likely to be you know, significant faunal remains that can tell us things about people's, you know, past subsistence and life ways and things like that. But I think part of the other problem is that we're, you know, we're not always screening with, you know, screens that are of a small enough gauge to capture a lot of small faunal remains and things like that.
Oh, speak for yourself, Trevor. I do everything through window mesh.
1/32nd.
While in the field, folks. That's right. Gabe has the nimblest fingers for
moving those
sand grains through the screen.
I did briefly do two test pits once at the Rusting Falls site with Jesse Webb that involved going through window mesh My most vivid memory of that is the sun setting as we continued to scream.
So, and I remember one year, Trevor, you and I, we were working together in CRM at our former employers, and I remember we came up with an idea to use graduated sieves, but we designed our screens in the wrong way in that the eighth inch mesh was over top of the quarter inch mesh, which... We then had to swap all the screen again so that the quarter inch sat in the eighth inch mesh.
That sounds much slower.
It was incredibly slow, I can tell you that. Yeah.
I'd just like to point out for history's sake and for the listener's benefit that you lumped me into this category of participating in this this event, but I seem to recall that this was you working on a specific project while I was off gallivanting around Northern.
Yeah, that might be true. That might be true. Yeah. Yeah. I will blame someone else for the construction of those screens. I don't think I built them. I don't think I built those screens.
Nothing quite says I didn't build them. Like, I don't think I built them. Trevor was gallivanting. What were you doing?
I can tell you, there are parts of that year I just flat don't remember. What's that, Trevor?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I'm going to file this under one of the many tasks over those couple of summers that Alex Pelche-Michaud and Jesse Webb probably were responsible for.
Poor Jesse. We've been building him up just to throw him under the bus. You're screwing up some screens.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. I just mean that while you and I and others were busy running around with our heads, like chickens with our heads cut off, those two were holding down the fort.
I decided I would purchase a house and get married in the same summer as I worked the most stressful project I had ever worked in my entire life. And so I essentially cannot remember from May until September. And I think that was around the same time.
May was the name of his first wife, and September was the name of the wife he was married to at the end of that summer.
Well, I was Wayne Stickles that summer.
Wait. Do we have the... Gentlemen, I just remembered we forgot the 641st entry of this bibliography. It's that article in the Manatee.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That should have been included.
It should have.
Well, we can throw it in the show notes.
Yes, definitely. Well, nothing like being satirized in...
Because it didn't make an appearance in episode one of season three. I'm holding up, the listener will see... Well, they won't see, actually, because this is an audio-only podcast, but they will hear this described as a character that Gabe and I have affectionately named Orange Julius, and this is a credit to Manu Baines, who produces YouTube videos and reviews under the Browntown Games handle, who very kindly 3D printed us a bust of Julius Caesar, and then painted it marble, and when I asked him, could you paint it orange and marble, he was thrilled at the idea, and made this very, and so this is our new mascot for the NB Arc Pod for season three.
Yeah, and listener, not 4 weeks ago, I was visiting a dear friend of Ken and mine in Southern England, and as a result, I got to see the Parthenon marbles, and let me just tell you, listener, the Parthenon marbles ain't got nothing on Orange Julius. And Ken, if the listener follows us on Instagram, they'll be able to see Orange Julius, I think, pretty soon. I think in the episode after this one, there's going to be some Orange Julius cameos.
So this will come out. Listener, we're going to do a little bit of a time exercise here. This will precede...
The listener can't see this, but Trevor's face has just done that like late Indiana Jones thing where it's gone forward and backwards all at once. He's holding up a chalice of near beer, and I can...
this will precede the field dispatches content.
Yes, I think it will.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Emmanuel, please note that this will precede the field dispatches. So, guys, I just want to say, too, on my own front, this has been a very exciting project.
It has been. This is the first time. This is the first publication. Trevor and I have been friends and colleagues for now 16 years.
This is the first. Wait, how? What was the first project you guys worked on?
So it would have been Mill Brook, but I was introduced to you in the fall of 2008, I believe. And
that sounds
when I was working
back when he was working as a tactical paramedic down in downtown Fredericton, and he heard that there was a man floating in a swimming pool.
Well, I feel like though we worked together the first year I worked in archaeology with Darcy on a project that maybe we were both sub consultants or something on. Either way, it's either 15 or 16 years. And this is the first time Trevor and I have published some. We're going to have a whole gaggle of publications here over the by the end of the calendar year, God willing, and the creek don't rise. But
release the Kraken, I believe is the phrase. We're going
but this is also the first time we've all got to work together on a project. This has been a lot of fun. We have a robust EndNote library now. I think all of us do as a result of this. And this is also something we haven't mentioned is that this is sort of part one of this project. It's a beautiful book, but we are also going to have a resource that will be a little bit more with the times than a book. So the works to 2022 will be your book reference. And then there will be works from 2022 appearing on the interweb. And so Trevor and Gabe, I think you guys can share a little bit more about that because that's going to be hosted through UMB Libraries.
So I think what we can share, though, Trevor, is that we're not actually sure logistically quite how this is going to work yet.
Yeah, it's going to basically part of this project too is the New Brunswick on a project is providing access to New Brunswickers to sources of this information. So all of these entries are going to be collated and included in an online searchable database repository, however you want to frame it. Previous volumes in this series, they have all of their citations currently up in this system. It's going to be a way, hopefully, once we get everything sorted out, for us to keep things updated. And as publications come out, after 2022, because that's where we cut ourselves off for this publication just for the sake of editing timelines and whatnot. It's also going to be an opportunity for us if we find stuff that we missed because, we used Turnbull and Davis's bibliography as a starting point and we found a bunch of stuff that they missed.
And they are way smarter than we are. So
yeah, exactly. Way smarter. And there are going to be people after us who probably come along and find stuff that we missed too. And that's hopefully what this tool will continue to be as a place to continue to put this information so that New Brunswickers, indigenous communities, partners, people that are, passionate about being stewards of our heritage can have that access to.
And look, listener, I think also, don't let me talk out of turn here, but I think if you email us and in the interim, if you just want the EndNote library, we'll send it to you.
Yep. And also, anybody who's in an undergraduate program or starting a graduate program, take the free class that your library offers on using EndNote software.
Yeah. And or save Zotero, it,
Zotero. Or Zotero, you know, whatever it is. Whatever your institution is offering for your bibliographic software. And just do it because it will save you so much time and so much painstaking Googling and searching through your various different folders for where that PDF is. It is remarkably awful user interface, but remarkably elegant. Technology. So yeah. I still don't understand how it can be so hard to use and be so good. But yes, it is the search engine for your own library on EndNote is laughably bad.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, listener, it's gotten to the point now where I actually have to use my EndNote library to make my own CV. It's a little embarrassing, but I can't live without it.
That folks, is what they call a humble brag.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. What's happened is there have just been so many books, you know. So I think to myself, well, oh my goodness, I've been the third author on so many things. So down the list. I appreciate one of the, listener. You can take this a little tip from me. If you want to be in academia, get a last name that tends to occur alphabetically down the author list. Because then you just play it cool. And you say, oh, it's not that I didn't do anything. It's that my last name appears a little late in the list. So you publish with, you know, Betts, Black, Dow, and Holyoke, these kind of guys. You're fine. No problem. It's not that you didn't do anything. It's that you have a strange fate of a last name. But as Ken was saying that, I was thinking to myself first that we should actually have Julie Morris probably on the program sometime to talk about bibliometrics, but also someone ought to talk about Zotero and EndNote probably as well, because these are really useful tools as you're doing this, and they're tools that really we didn't have when we were doing our master's theses.
Yeah, so the early versions of them might have been there, but I just don't think that the access to PDFs was quite as prolific as it is now. So yeah, we have a fantastic library roomie at our university who runs EndNote classes in the fall and in the spring. She might be somebody who would be really good to talk to, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. So we should think about doing like kind of an all libraries maybe edition here of the pod.
Yeah.
The listener will notice that we said we were definitely going to do mostly human environmental interactions for this season, and we've now proposed a series of things that have nothing to do with this.
They're going to get three seats. Well, the third episode though, we have a human environmental interaction with Route 11.
That's right. Yeah. The environment being New Brunswick. I think one of also listener, I just as a little bit of deja vu, I remember being in the Enterprise lab as Ken Holyoke looked at his thesis and then also looked at the back of his notebook where he'd not written full bibliographic entries but had just written things like Black 2001, Betts 2005, and thinking to myself, who? He's going to have a rough year.
Yeah, that took a long time. I credit my EndNote experience, Mike O'Rourke, who is now an archaeologist with, I believe it's the Northwest Territories. He's a climate change.
Oh, it's not Prince of Wales anymore?
Oh, Prince of Wales Institute, but they're part of the Northwest Territories government.
Oh, excellent. Excellent archaeologist and friend of
and
ours.
And climate change archaeologist. And Mike, when I first started my PhD, we were at a grad student gathering and he was like, I'm going to give you a tip. He's like, there's this software called EndNote. And he's like, start using it right now. He's like, because I just started using it like 3 months ago and I wish I had started from the start. So thank you, Mike, for that. That's
real shout out to Mike. I think it will save your bacon. That's the key. Key theme. So, gentlemen, this has been a totally self-indulgent podcast, listener, and we apologize a little bit for that, but we don't actually entirely apologize because we are actually pretty excited about this book.
Yes. I'm really excited to get home and see my physical copies of this book. Trevor was kind enough to bring one in so I could touch it. That's,
Did you lick it, Ken? That's what
I did not lick it, but you never know, so...
No, okay. Well, that's good because it just tastes like high-end ivory. The cover is a sort of ivory color. Did you notice? Yeah, it...
11 out of 10 for Hanfield.
Yeah, absolutely. And listener, if you're one of these people that likes to appear periodically on CNN and want your bookshelf to look like you are an intellectual, order 600 of these. Just lay them out. I mean, the spine will blur, as Trevor is showing right now. And you will look like a sophisticated. But I think, gentlemen, so we've been stroking our own egos a bit, and that is all just fine, because I like seeing myself in print as much as you all do. But I think the truth of any kind of project like this is that, in fact, probably a lot of other people should be on the cover. and we thank them in the book, of course, to the best of our ability. So... one of the things we note in the acknowledgments is that Ken and I created the initial version of this in a Google Drive years ago, and probably a lot of you who may be listening contributed to this, and we just apologize. We don't remember who gave us those citations or even where we were. I mean, I actually used a different name back then. The listener won't know that, but I was in the Witness Protection Program. It's a very strange thing. Imagine trying to get into your own Google to access your Google Drive when you've changed your name and your social security number and your social insurance number.
The M wasn't always card. Martin.
No, absolutely not. But no, seriously, we do have a whole lot of people to thank, I think, here. So this will be a little bit redundant, but the listener, if you are at an academic institution, you know the value, I think, of an academic library. They are a beautiful institution in which if you go to the librarian, you basically can talk to them and be like, I need this obscure thing. And the librarian will look you in the eyes unblinkingly and say, we love obscure. And I think we can genuinely say that there's only one thing in this bibliography that we were not actually able to get a copy of. And I'm going to pause dramatically here and then not tell the listener. We know it exists for a number of reasons, but we were not able to see it. But especially at the Harriet Irving Library, we'd like to thank Julie Morse, who Trevor mentioned, but also Eric Moore, who's a subject librarian and got us a ton of stuff that we just, you know, mere mortals cannot access these things, but professional librarians are able to. We'd also like to thank Dave Black, and this is kind of like a theme of the podcast, is we would like to thank Dave Black. But he basically did this thing that he always does, where he handed over a file cabinet and was like, have at it, boys. But then he also was like, would you like to look around my bookshelf? Which was also very helpful because we were able to actually look at a bunch of things. And we mentioned the complete run of the New Brunswick Archaeology Society Bulletin field notes that we wouldn't have been able to get our hands on that easily. Like, we would have had pieces and chunks, but not the same way. We mentioned the software we used, which was Zotero, which is a shareware. It's a great product. I think, Trevor, you're a Zotero user, right?
I am, yeah. I'm not an EndNote user. I use Zotero, and I like it a lot.
Yeah, and it's free, too.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like a...
And it has... One of the things I love about it is it has a... And maybe EndNote does as well, but it has a browser extension, so when you're on, like, a website or on, like, a... like JSTOR, like another online journal, you can just click the extension in your browser and it'll add it immediately to your Zotero library, which is just amazing.
That's cool, yeah. I use EndNote because I don't want to learn new tricks, and this is so I pony up the money. And we'd really like to thank the folks, too, at Gaspro Press. I mean, so this includes Andrew Steves, and then the editor of the series, who's not a Gaspro Press, but a former librarian at The Hill. Jocelyn Thompson. So, you know, I mean, book doesn't happen without them. And it also, the book is beautiful. Like, the binding is sewn. You may be used to buying books that Ken and I have been involved in, and you've thought, well, this was fun, but it blew up in my hand. This book isn't going to blow up, folks. This is you can hand this to your kids someday, and they'll say, well, works to 2022 doesn't seem, or 2022 doesn't seem very useful, but it won't blow up in their hands. We had some research assistants on this project, Walter Island and Paige Repton, who were super helpful because, in part because this Google thing that Ken and I had created, it didn't transfer easily into the software. And so it was really useful to have Walter and Paige deal with that. So thank you very much. The listener might recognize Wally as a kind of friend of the program.
Yep.
So thanks very much, Wally. That's
right. Bingo card.
Yeah, yeah. Wally.
Yes, yes, the bingo cards. That's right.
Yes.
First season bingo cards. Yeah.
That's right. We'd also like to thank the UNB Department Administrator, Judy Babin, and kind of the like list of things that Judy did on this project. We would sort of miss them. It probably includes emotional support.
Forgot her title, which is the incomparable Judy.
Yes,
Babin,
that's right.
Because yeah, she literally did so much that it's just impossible to thank her for everything.
But. Yes, we did. In fact, so I should say, guys. So I handed her a copy of this book today. because and I mentioned, I said, oh, Judy, you're in it. And she sort of looked at it, and then she kind of squinted at me and sort of had this look that she said, well, I don't remember doing this. And I said, well, that's because I'm always asking you to do things all the time, Judy. You're sort of running the place. And, you know, it would be sort of like if you approached, you know, like a CEO of a major company and you were like, I just really want to thank you for this bumper. You know, like, hello, yeah. Head of Audi. I just am glad to have been a part of this bumper. And Judy's kind of, but Judy actually made this thing work in a way yeah. that we otherwise would not have been. And, you know, like, among the things Judy did was she made sure that, like, Paige and Wally got paid, which was good.
Yep.
She made sure that...
it's important to pay your undergrads.
It is important to pay your undergrads. She made sure that when things came in that we needed scanned, because we had to scan stuff to make sure it was real, and we could sort of check it, she dealt with all of that. I think we really just can't thank Judy enough.
No.
We can't thank Judy enough is actually a theme of perhaps our lives. But thank you, Judy. And she also made sure that when I needed to pay for my EndNote software because my subscription had lapsed, that that was taken care of.
The paperwork got filed.
Yeah, that's right. And so, listener, if you want a copy of this book, it's about $40 Canadian. And I think we're sort of fairly committed also to making sure that this book exists in the public. So if, like, you're having a hard time with that, let us know and we'll try to figure something out. We also, you know, like we said, we'll share the EndNote file with you. So, you know, you can have access to this. We're trying to make it accessible. But we do encourage, if you have the means, it's a beautiful book. And we hope you would like to have it on your shelves. We're hopeful it's going to end up in some local bookshops. I think it will. But in the meantime, the easiest way to get it is probably, like, if you want it right now, is to just log on to Gaspereau Press. Yeah. Check out their other
stuff. It's also on Indigo, too, I noticed.
Oh, is it? Okay, great. Yeah. And for the American listener, Indigo is like an Amazon knockoff that exists here in Canada.
Closer to Barnes & Noble, probably.
Yeah, Barnes & Noble, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. But here, the Nobles, it's like the Senate, so it's very complicated. But you can check out Gaspereau Press. And like, while you're there, I mean, check out the other bibliography series. I have... all of them except the children's literature one, I admit. But I think I'm going to get that one because I think it would make a nice set. So I've enjoyed all of them.
And stay tuned for the extended edition boxed set that's going to be coming out next Christmas.
That's right. Yes. And in the fifth one, Trevor is going to do a series of Dungeons & Dragons games. That it's a bibliography of New Brunswick Dungeons & Dragons game sets, listeners. So.
Yep.
Trevor will be there for that. So, gentlemen, I think we Ken looks like he perhaps is going to die.
I'm battery's dead. That's what it comes down to.
So I think we got to let him go. But I was wondering if gentlemen, I just want to say for my part, this was an extraordinary pleasure working with you on this. And Ken, it was exciting because this has been a thing we've worked on unknowingly, I think, perhaps since I met you. In 2009, I think. And Trevor, it's been a real pleasure working with you on this because, in addition to being, you know, a good friend of ours, you have brought all sorts of new perspectives on this through your bibliometric research.
Yeah, thank you.
And
it's been a pleasure.
And for both you guys, 15 years in the making, and with two people that I absolutely enjoy your company inside and outside of archaeology, and it's really, really awesome to see all three of our names together. That's really cool.
Yeah, agreed.
So, listener, the book is Bibliography of New Brunswick Archaeology, Works to 2022, and it's the fourth volume of the New Brunswick Bibliography Series. Gentlemen, it's been a real treat talking with you about this book, and I am excited to see it on fine bookshelves everywhere. So this has been fun, and nice work, guys. I enjoyed this a lot.
Yep. I did too. All right. Good night, listener.
See you later.
You'll also probably hear something after this because I think we're probably going to record something else. Is that right? Not right now.
No, we're actually just going to do a funk sound, which is as you hit the bed, the race car bed in your childhood bedroom.
Do you hear that? You hear that, Emmanuel? Just actually, the great awk gargling sound should be playing over my voice right now. Like...
Yeah.
All right. Congratulations, Trevor, Gabe. We'll talk to you soon.
Congratulations, guys. Real pleasure. All right. Well, Ken, that was fun chatting with you. We traveled through time again.
Yep.
And it was nice to talk to Trevor about that that project, which, as we, I believe, just mentioned, and all the folks we thanked, we really appreciate it. And the book is currently available from Gaspereau Press.
It is. And on Indigo. Although I noticed yesterday it is sold out online, which means Indigo purchased two copies. But yeah, it is also available on Indigo, Chapters Indigo. So
great. And we hope you'll consider acquiring a copy.
Yeah.
And so, Ken, we've got something else that we're going to do here soon, that's coming soon, for the, especially for the new listener, and that is we're going to be recording a trailer.
That's right. So new listeners who are just discovering the podcast, you might be listening to the new episodes and then thinking you're going to go back to the back catalog. Well, we do have a fairly large back catalog, but we always discourage listeners from listening to the first episode because
we do.
It is a bit of a minefield. We don't really know what we're doing, and we probably have lost a lot of listeners who started with the first episode. So
the biggest problem with the first episode is that it's bad.
It's bad, and it also doesn't really make a whole lot of sense because it's an episode almost about nothing. You don't learn anything about what the show is really about. We didn't really know what the show was about at that point. The sound is not great and all this other stuff. And so what we're going to do, listener, is...
other than that, it's a fine episode.
Other than that, yeah. So, but if you start with episode two of the first season, you're going to get into the background of New Brunswick archaeology, and then you're going to work your way through some cultural historical literature listening. And so throughout the first season, it's all kind of culture history. We also introduce the intrusive features. So if you see an episode called Intrusive Feature, these were, at the start of the show, episodes that were essentially interviews with colleagues of ours, which is what the show has kind of more become. So they are when we're going to conferences and that kind of thing. You'll see there are episodes that are called Great Sites, starting in the second season, and that is where we highlight one specific archaeological site from New Brunswick, which is of interest, and so we kind of do a deep dive on one episode. And you'll notice in the second season, we actually have a couple of two-parters. So one is a two-part series on pseudo-archaeology. The other one is a two-part series on archaeologist-collector relationships. And I don't think we have any other theme episodes, do we?
Safety.
Safety. Yeah. So so that's like a throughput, is that we talk a lot about safety throughout the show. And there is a specific episode on safety.
Specifically. Yes, that's right. Yep.
So that kind of navigates you through those first couple of seasons. The trailer will be a little bit more exciting. I think Emmanuel is probably going to work some magic and clip in some bits and pieces from these episodes, but it should allow you to navigate where you want to go for the show, and something that you can...
And the crucial... just one of the crucial things to note is that you can really listen to the... After the first season, you can really listen in any order.
Yes. And for those of you who are listening on YouTube, one of the things that you will miss is that there are several episodes from the first season and a couple from the second that were actually longer than 2 hours. And so, as a result, we're actually not able to upload them to YouTube. And I don't really know how we would get them up there. I think we'd have to split it into two parts. So if you are wondering why you're missing some episodes on YouTube, go to rss.com/podcast/NBArchaeology, or find us on Apple Podcasts or Amazon Podcasts or Spotify, and you can fill in the gaps on those episodes.
Exactly right. And so, Ken, I think on that note, we can probably set the listener free.
Yes.
And I can tell what's important that we let them go now, because they've probably just ordered the book, the bibliography from Gaspereau Press, and are probably desperate to start checking the mail to see if it's arrived.
And they're very excited for that hand feel that that Trevor highlights in his description of the book, and it is excellent. Yes.
Feels good in the hand.
Feels good in the hand. Excellent paperweight.
Excellent paperweight. And it's sewn. It's a sewn binding, I believe. So the listener may be used to the far northeast, 3,000 BP to contact, where even a gentle page turner can almost immediately undo the glue that holds it together.
Yeah, so,
this is not going to happen with this bibliography.
Such a poor binding on that book that it actually is, it is described in one of the book reviews about the book as one of the only downsides to it is that the book fell apart while reading it. So.
Well, Ken, pleasure talking to you as always. And that was fun. And listener, we'll see you again in a fortnight.
Yep, we'll see you later, Gabe, and listeners and new listeners. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for taking part in the quest to 10K. And I guess now it's the quest to the next milestone. I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, I mean, this is like one of those the things that if I take one more step outside of the Shire, it'll be the furthest I've ever gone.
All right, listener, we hope that we don't end up at Mount Doom, but we'd be happy to have you in our fellowship. So we'll talk to you in a fortnight.
Talk to you soon, listener.